#1 sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. You know what they say.
You know what they say. See a broad to get that booty act.
Lay her down. Smack her. Jack.
Oh, God. Nighttime is the right time.
You know the night
it's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
If we die, we die together.
And YahooSportsRadio.com.
Tony D with you.
Getting interactive. Recapping everything that's going down.
And giving you your first chance to react. Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Yahoo Sports Radio
is now.
This is what we do.
From the Quick and Loan studios, here's Tony D.
Embrace the chaos. If there's one thing that's consistent in life, it's death, taxes, and the word chaos gets used in college football. Every year, this phrase gets thrown out there. It's going to be chaos. Chaos is going to ensue in the college football. Yeah, well, because when you have a whole bunch of teams 6-7 weeks into the season and they all have one loss, or they're all, you know, a couple are undefeated and some with one loss, there's just this belief that it's all going to be like this and there's no other way around it. My God, what are we going to do? We're going to have 20 teams all with one loss. How are they ever going to get four? Does it ever happen that way? I'm not saying we don't have controversies. No, of course we do. But do we really ever have 7 or 8 teams vying for the top spots in college football? I mean, under the old BCS, did we ever have a year where it was like, holy cow, there are just 7 teams at the end of the season. They could take any 2. It works itself out. It plays itself out. If you're not a fan of the conference championships, and I understand why, it's big money grab, and it can actually hurt your team in the long run, because you can actually go undefeated in college football or have one loss, play for the conference championship, lose that game, and not get the kind of love that you're going to need to get into the playoff. But conference playoffs have a tendency to work things out like that. Look, we are in love with a lot of teams in college football right now, but that's only because it's mid-October. We still have a month and a half left to go. Baylor and TCU are going to play each other, right? Utah still has some games in a tough and pesky Pac-12. Clemson may go undefeated, and if they do, they're going to beat Florida State. And one of those two teams is going to win the ACC. And one of those two teams, if they win the ACC with 0 or 1 loss, is going to go to the playoff, and nobody else is. Let me make that clear. Nobody else is. The reason why people look at chaos is because they don't know what we're going to see down the road. There are just too many variables, right? We know that Baylor and TCU are going to play, and Alabama and LSU are going to play, and Clemson and Florida State are going to play, and Michigan State and Ohio State, and all these, they're going to play tougher opponents. We get all that. We get that. But it's too easy. It's too easy to see, oh my God, you've got Florida State unbeaten at 9. Well, I have no idea how this committee is going to sort this all out. Well, you know what they're going to do? They're going to sort it out in the first week they get together, and then the second week it's going to get a little easier, then the third week it's going to get a little easier, and it's just going to get a little easier all the way to the end, and then there's going to be some decisions to be made, but there's not going to be 100 decisions to be made. You're not going to have Ohio State, Michigan, Baylor, TCU, LSU, Alabama, Clemson, Stanford, Notre Dame, Florida State, all potentially getting into this thing. You're not. You're going to see some teams lose, and you're going to see some teams fall. That's the way it's going to be. Florida Gators are 6-1. Do you know what kind of team the Gators are going to be if they finish the year with one loss? If they finish the year with one loss, you know what the Gators are? SEC champions. Is the SEC champion going to the playoff? You better believe it is. It's the same with Stanford. Stanford finishes the year one loss. Oh, guess what they are? Pac-12 champs. Right? That's just the way it's going to be for a lot of these teams. Now, some of these teams could have one loss and not play and be SEC champion or ACC champion, like LSU. LSU can lose to Alabama, run the table. Alabama runs the table, but Alabama wins the West and goes to Atlanta. But Florida, who's in first place, if they continue to win games, will represent the East, and if they finish with one loss, will win the conference title. What I'm just saying is this. Don't get caught up in the chaos hype when it comes to college football. Don't think it's a disaster. It's always a disaster. It wouldn't be college football this time of year if we weren't concerned about all the potential teams that could be in it. But we know better. We know better. It does sort its way out. It does. It always has. There's a couple of years you go, oh, okay, I'm not really sure about that. You know, the one year that two-loss LSU team played for the national title probably wasn't the shining moment of college football. But even when the year when Alabama was picked second over LSU, they did so over Oklahoma State. It wasn't like they vaulted five other teams that had a claim to that final spot. This will work itself out. Yeah, you know, we were talking earlier tonight about UCLA and their victory over Cal, and now you've got a conference that's in kind of disarray right now, because when you look at the way the Pac-12 standings are, yes, you have Utah, and they are unbeaten. But then you've got all these one to two loss teams plus three loss teams overall. And guess what? This conference is a conference where you're going to get games from people that are not ranked. You're going to get good battles. UCLA beat Cal, who was ranked, because UCLA is good and are led by a good young quarterback. USC could beat Utah. Right, I mean, USC can still beat anybody on their schedule, anybody. And that's a problem in the conference. You don't want, if you're a conference commissioner, you don't want 10 really good teams that are close together. You don't. It's too risky. There's too much money at stake to get into the college football playoff. So you've got to get into the college football playoff. And if you don't get in, it's probably because you guys beat each other up so much that you were left with a two-loss team as a champion. And if you were left with a two-loss team as a champion, you may not be going in. The Pac-12 is so hyped up as one of the best conferences in college football, and it may be, but if they keep beating each other up, they're not going to have a representative in the playoff, and that's too bad. And as we saw last year with TCU and Baylor, you better tell us who your best team is, because we're not going to figure it out for you. Now, the committee says, oh, that had nothing to do with it. You know, the non-conference championship had nothing to do with it. I kind of think it did. I still believe it did. In some ways. Not always, but in some ways. Because when I looked at what happened last year, I saw Ohio State getting tremendous amount of benefit from winning the Big Ten championship. And that's what we're going to see at the end of the season. Conference championship games for a lot of the conferences that are going to matter. So chaos, don't buy it. Don't buy it. 800-777-2907. You want to get in the conversation? Also, hit us up on Twitter. You can follow me there at Tony D Radio. You can also follow me on Fan React at Tony D Radio. We'd love to hear you at both of those places. Coming up next are Heisman 5. Yes, Leonard Fournette is the front runner, but who else is creeping up? That's next, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, that little gold trophy, that Heisman Trophy, one of the best in the sports world. They're going to be giving it out in December. Who's going to win it? Well, we like to give you our Heisman 5, the 5 players on our poll that have a great shot of going to New York and winning this thing. Adam and I will start with number 5. Are you ready?
I am.
All right, let's start. I'll let you go first. Who's 5 on your bottom list here?
I have Ezekiel Elliott.
Ezekiel Elliott of Ohio State. Well done. I have Christian McCaffrey.
I wanted to put Christian McCaffrey, and I wanted to put Derrick Henry, but I just felt like Ezekiel Elliott still deserves to be on there before them.
Yes, I put Christian McCaffrey because I really was. I loved all the numbers that he had put up in the in that recent game, mm-hmm. and I wanted new blood into the mix, so I decided to get him in there.
Yeah.
All right, number four.
Get rid of it. Corey Coleman of Baylor.
Corey Coleman of Baylor. I have Ezekiel Elliott, but Corey Coleman is a great choice.
He just keeps doing it week in and week out. Him and Stephen Russell. They just keep doing
it. Great choice. I put Ezekiel Elliott because I don't think you can have a top five without Ezekiel Elliott. It depends on where you put him, but he's got to be in your top five.
Yeah.
Number three on your list.
Dalvin Cook, Florida State.
Dalvin Cook, Florida State. He is really starting to rise up.
Yes, he is.
He's really starting to rise up. And again, you watch that South area of the country where they're looking for that one representative in the South. Leonard Fournette is going to get a lot of South votes. So Dalvin Cook has really got to try to win over a lot of other regions in the country. Florida State is a lot more, let's just say, a lot more global in terms of national than LSU is, because they play in an ACC that goes all the way up to Syracuse and Boston College. So Dalvin Cook could get on a lot of Heisman votes.
Right.
But Fournette's gonna, is the front runner. I have Seth Russell because I've been kind of ignoring Seth Russell, but I can't now with the 27 touchdowns that he's thrown. The Baylor bubble, you gotta think it's gonna burst, right? They have put over 60 points per game in the last five. And the one that they don't have 60, they have 56.
They just don't seem to be getting tested by anybody. I mean, TCU's been tested, but Baylor's just doing it week in, week out, and then no one can stop them. It's a video game to them.
Yeah, this Baylor reminds me of when my son plays Madden football.
Yeah,
when I go into the playroom area, and I see him sitting there playing Madden, and I go, "Oh, what's the score?" And he goes, "Ha, yeah, I'm killing him 72-0." And I go, "What fun is that? Yeah. What do you?" "Oh, yeah, yeah. What do you have it on?" "Oh, I have it on rookie, and I'm playing the worst team, and I set all my guys to go." And I'm like, so let me get this straight. You set up the whole thing so that you could win these games 72-0. And you find this fun? Baylor is that kind of team, right? You're putting up 60-plus points a game. 60-plus points a game in a sport that doesn't really think you should be doing that. Isn't designed for you to be doing that. And that's why Seth Russell is three. All right, number two?
Trevon Boykin.
Trevon Boykin is the same thing with me. And, of course, Leonard Fournette is number one. So, like I said earlier, Fournette is going to be on everybody's ballot. No matter if you are voting in Seattle to Maine to San Diego, Fournette is going to be on everybody's ballot. What I'm curious is, okay, Fournette's probably going to win this thing, barring injury. I mean, he's killing all the Heisman polls that are out there and whatnot. But I'm interested to see who's going to go. Now, because they can't take everybody, but there's a lot of candidates.
There is.
A lot of good candidates. Now, again, some guys will have bad weeks and kind of disappear. But if we're just looking at, hey, who's going to go to New York and get the full Heisman treatment, right? They may not win it. Some of them are going to know they're not going to win it. But in the end, it's a once-in-a-lifetime experience to go to New York to get be part of the ceremony, to be part of the whole pomp and circumstance of it, to get your life story out there, to get your parents at an event where you're being kind of somewhat honored. There's a lot of players that are going to be deservedly set to go there.
Don't they normally take either three or five?
That's about it. Yeah,
I mean,
five is really rare, depending on how the voting goes.
Right. I mean, I just feel like you're going to obviously take Fournette, barring injury. I'm sure Boykin's going to be there. And then that's where I think it's I don't want to say a drop-off, because there's guys that are just as good as Boykin, but, then you decide, do you want to bring another running back or, Corey Coleman, the only wide receiver that's really getting any buzz? Does Myles Garrett, if he finishes the season strong, does he get to go as a defensive player? So there's just a lot of questions.
Yeah, and there was one year, I want to say it was a handful of years ago, there was a lot of uproar because there was one person that didn't get invited to New York, right? And everybody was really curious because he had been on all the polls and he was getting a lot of love. And, they didn't think he would win, but at the same time, they thought it was going to be close. And the Heisman basically said, it's not as close as you think. He's not invited. And I wish I could remember who that is, but that's kind of the mindset. I bring it up because that's the mindset. It depends on how the voting vote. If you've got five and there's a really close gap between one and five, they'll invite all five. But if they, but if it's close between one, two, and three, or even if Leonard Fournette's a runaway, but the next two are close together, and then there's a huge drop-off from three to four, they won't invite four.
Right.
So it's kind of in that vein. I think this year is one of those years where, yeah, okay, Leonard Fournette, barring injury, is probably going to win this thing going away. But if you start looking at the graphic of the country, where is the guy on this list outside of Leonard Fournette? Who on this list gets their name on just about every ballot as a second or third vote?
I just pulled up ESPN's experts poll on the Heisman right now. They got Fournette getting all 10 first place votes. They have Trevon Boykin getting 9 of the second place votes. So Fournette and Boykin are on their own level.
Right.
It's 50 to 39 in total points. And then Ezekiel Elliott, Corey Coleman, Dalvin Cook, and Derrick Henry all are within just a few points of each other.
Now, see, Derrick Henry's an interesting case because Derrick Henry, when we talked to our Alabama guy this week, we were talking about Derrick Henry's having a great year for Alabama, a great year. But he is in the Leonard Fournette region.
Correct.
So he can't get I don't think he's going to get on enough ballots nationally to make a push. And the other thing is that guys are picky. They don't want to go necessarily all running backs or all quarterbacks, or they want to mix it up a little bit. So Fournette is going to be on everybody's ballot, but they're going to be looking at quarterbacks and go, well, I got to throw a quarterback on here, and that's probably Boykin. Is there room in a Boykin ballot for Seth Russell?
That's
is there
the same
room,
kind of thing,
right?
Like
same kind of thing. Same part of the country, same conference, all right? Same neck of the woods. Am I going to put two quarterbacks? Well, one of them is going to beat the other, but am I going to put two quarterbacks who are that close together in that same thing? The interesting candidate to me on this list is Christian McCaffrey, because Devontae Booker is it might get some love, but McCaffrey could own the West Coast, could own the entire West Coast based on getting on every ballot on the entire western part of the United States. He could end up going. So that's why I love the Heisman, because it's like the Electoral College in politics. You got to know where your votes are coming from. You got to know where the mindset of where people are around the country. The world has gotten smaller and we can see a lot more players, but the local mindset still is prevalent in this.
This is Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Working the third shift.
This is Tony D.
Once again,
from the Quicken Loans Studios, here's Tony D.
All right, we're going to hook up with Eric Adelson from Yahoo Sports. He is out in London, England, so it's going to take a little bit more time than we normally do with our guests. So we get him hooked up. I love the idea of expanding the brand. I don't have any problem with that. I know people think I'm down on the London thing, and I'm not. I think it's cool that the NFL is taking its product to all sorts of different points. I think it's fine. What I don't like is I don't like the idea of the NFL pitching that they'll be going to London soon, an expansion team. I don't think it makes sense. And no one has been able to explain to me properly how you would put it all together. But they just did an expansion. The Buffalo Bills and the Jacksonville Jaguars have just expanded their agreement with London. They'll be out there until 2020. It's obviously working well enough for them. They're sending enough games out there. And this one is really interesting for Yahoo Sports because it's a stream. So you can wake up, get to your tablet, and stream the game and watch the game. And this is where the future is coming. We're going to start seeing this play out more and more in sports. And for those who say, oh, well, I mean, so what? I mean, you can stream it. Yeah, but we're talking about the ability now of the whole world being able to have access to this game live. That's where I think this is great. Eric Adelson joins us from London, from Yahoo Sports, to talk some NFL. How are you, Eric?
Good,
good. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks you. I probably didn't put together the right way what this means to have Yahoo Sports streaming this live. What does this mean for the NFL to have this game being able to go onto the internet where everybody in the world can get it?
I mean, I think you said it well. I mean, this is another step in it becoming a truly global game. I mean, I think that all over the planet people have heard of the NFL, but it's still an American sport. And this is a step towards other people becoming new fans. And there's going to be people who are watching this sport for the first time on Sunday. And that's very exciting from a business sense for the NFL. It's certainly exciting here at Yahoo. But it's also exciting, I think, from an historic sense, because we're going to get eventually to the place where I think that all these games will be streaming. Not soon, but eventually. And I think people will look back at this game as the start of something much bigger.
Do you think that the NFL is more interested in Americans to seeing if Americans adapt to this quickly or want to do this quickly? Or are they really interested in the unique hits from around the world?
Yeah, no, I do think it's both. I mean, I think that the American market is pretty much saturated, but there's so many new fans. I mean, just walking around here in London this week, you see the potential. I don't think the American football is going to be like soccer. But, I mean, just like soccer has grown in America, and I think much more recently than I expected, there's that opportunity for it to grow here in London, where I am. So, and also, this is kind of an experiment. I mean, it's an experiment in terms of technology, but also I think in terms of habits. If you're watching this on your screen, are you toggling back and forth to social media? Are your eyes on the screen? How long will the streams go if you download it? I think that there's a lot that can be learned here just from an educational sense about habits and about what the future of broadcasting consumption is like.
All right, as far as the people in London, this is, you know, we've done this now for a number of years. Is there a sense of normalcy now with the NFL coming and playing at Wembley Stadium and whatnot, or are people genuinely still excited that the NFL is coming?
That's a really good question. I talked to the Jags owner, Shad Khan, a little bit about this yesterday. And I think it's still sort of a novelty. I think that it's people know what it is, and it's exciting. But I don't think it's normal yet. I don't think it's typical yet. And I don't think a lot of these fans really have a team yet. I think that you're going to see a lot of different jerseys. And if you're from here, you don't really grow up with one of these teams. I think the Jags are hoping that they will be that team, but I don't think it's really happened. I think I've seen maybe one Jags jersey here. It's really an assortment of people choosing different teams, and I think it'll be very interesting as we go on. Will the Jags be London's team? Jay Ajayi was a Boise State running back who was on the Dolphins, came over here, wasn't playing, he was injured. Extremely popular, though. So will it be a case where there's a star who grows up here and then goes and makes it big in the NFL, and then that becomes the team of choice over here? I talked to O.C. Umeniora, who has British roots, and he said that he thinks it's going to be that. He's going to be like, this is really going to take off when you have British players succeeding in the NFL and becoming stars in the NFL, because I thought this is a really good parallel. What's it going to be like? What would it be like if Messi or Ronaldo grew up in the U.S.? What kind of impact would that have on soccer in America? So,
good point.
I thought that was a great point. And I think that this is going to be really interesting to sort of see when the novelty sort of where it's still going to be an event. But if we go to more games per year, like a four-game schedule per year, are these people going to choose a team, or are they going to keep just cheering for the sport? And I don't know the answer to that.
When you talk to people, do you get a sense that the people who are into it, the Londoners who are into it, are they into things like Deflategate? Are they into the draft? Are they into the other things that we Americans follow 24/7?
No, I don't get a sense of that at all. I think the only time I heard Deflategate this year was, or this trip was when I was saying it. No, I don't get that sense at all. I don't think that they care. I just think that, I mean, it's really as if an EPL match was held on American soil. I think people would come and they would just want to watch it. I mean, it's really like there's a game tomorrow. It's our tomorrow in London, being Saturday, and I know it's not Saturday for all your listeners, or not Friday for all your listeners. But I'm going to go and see Chelsea. I'm trying to see Chelsea and West Ham. I don't know a player on each team. I don't know what the standings are. I don't even know really which team is good. I just want to see it. You know, I just want to see what it's like and stoke in the atmosphere and go to this place and see what happens. And I think that's a sense of what a lot of these fans. Now, certainly, there's expats. There's people who really like the Jags. There's people who really like the Bills. I have seen some Bills jerseys around. So there's certainly some hardcore fans. But I think for most people, it's like, this is a cool event. It's happening at a great stadium. And the world is watching. And so I think it's still that. It's still just sort of a concert event as much as it is a sporting event here for now.
And it's good for the NFL because the average Londoner doesn't watch like Monday night's game and go, that's bad football like we all did in America. They just go, hey, this is pretty neat. Whatever this is, I'm just kind of excited it's here.
Yeah, it's a spectacle. Yeah, but I think that and this is something I wrote about a little bit yesterday, which is, you know, if the Jags get to be really good, I mean, really competitive. I mean, if Blake Bortles turns into another star. Or TJ Yeldon or one of these players just breaks out, what's going to happen then? Because then you're going to get some familiarity. I mean, Bortles is only year two. This is a very young team, the Jags. So even though they're used to seeing the Jaguars, they're not used to seeing these players. And so it'll be, you know, Bortles is almost a test case of can he be the first British star of this team? I think that they want him to be that. I think that they think he is that, but it's still early to tell, because it's only year two for him, and it's still a bad team, trying to get better. But if they do get better, I'm really curious to see what people think of him and what people think of the team.
This is something I didn't think about. That's why I like talking to you, because one thing leads to another question that I didn't think of. But if I'm Blake Bortles and I'm his people, why wouldn't I go there in my off season and try to talk to some people and start getting the Blake Bortles brand? If I know my team, the team I'm on, is going to be there till 2020, we're going there every year. Why not start making a name for myself in terms of endorsements and just trying to build the Blake Bortles brand or anybody on the Jaguars for doing that?
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting. That's such a good question. You know, Bortles, I mean, it was only a few years ago. Bortles was a tight end in Oviedo, Florida, and not really recruited as a quarterback, and he gets to UCF. He's still unknown. And then he turns into a first-round pick. I mean, I remember writing about him coming out of UCF, and people, I mean, even I think you probably remember going into that Baylor game, and people didn't really take UCF seriously. Baylor was favored by 15 points. And then, like, wow, this guy's really good. People were shocked when he went that high in the draft. I mean, I was in the draft room, and there was this kind of like gasp when he went that high. That was the big surprise of that draft in the first round, at that point in the draft anyway. I think that Bortles is like, he's thinking about his footwork. I think he's thinking about making the right passes. I saw him play against Houston on Sunday. He had some really pretty passes. He had some really terrible passes. So I think he's thinking, okay, I got to excel at this sport at this level. But you're right. You're right. I mean, he really could be a sort of a transformational figure in this country if the Jaguars keep playing, which they will, and if they win. Nobody's really going to identify with the other players yet. I mean, TJ Yeldon could be that guy, or Allen Robinson is having a great season, but it's usually the quarterback. It's the easiest guy to identify on the field. Certainly a guy that he's got a name that I think people will remember and know. He's got a shot at this, and I think it's too soon now, but if he has a good game this weekend and they get a win and they get some momentum, I don't think it would be a bad idea at all for the Jags to come back or for him to come back. A lot of these guys travel in the offseason. You know, this sort of could be another home for him, at least in terms of his reputation.
Eric Adelson joining us live in London, where the Buffalo Bills and the Jacksonville Jaguars will play, and you can catch that streamed on yahoosports.com. Eric, what is this? Is there still a buzz around the league about a possible franchise placement in London?
Yeah, no, I asked Chad Kahn, the Jaguars owner, about that yesterday. He said it's way too early. He doesn't dislike the idea of it. I mean, he wants to be kind of the only team that plays here all the time. I said, what about a preseason game here? He said, we haven't looked at that, but it's a possibility, sure. He doesn't dismiss or deride any of these ideas, but he feels like it's too early to talk about that because he said he doesn't want to be a competitive disadvantage, which I think it is, actually. I mean, the Jaguars just arrived here. I mean, think about the jet lag for anybody who has traveled internationally. I mean, they're going to be zonked today. Then tomorrow is really their only day to really prepare for this game physically here. And then they play, and it's early in the morning American time on Sunday. That's a tough, tough situation. So I think that if you think about the Seahawks or San Francisco having to fly all this way for one game, and then sure, maybe you get a bye, but it's just, it's operationally and physically, it's a haul. And I don't think that that's, I think that right now, I think that that's sort of a bridge too far. But the Jags do have facilities here. They're used to it. And I mean, again, in a pure business sense, you can't really go anywhere else in America. There's no untapped markets in America. Every city is a football city in America. You got to go elsewhere if you're going to really grow it. For that reason, I would not rule this out. And honestly, I've always been skeptical about LA, and I'm less skeptical about London. I think that it logistically is tough, but in terms of business sense, it does work.
When the NFL does go there, and you talked about Jacksonville just arriving, do they want one of the teams there for the full week so fans can go to a practice or do the basic PR stuff teams are kind of would do when they're out there?
No, I think it really helps. Honestly, I think it helps everybody for the team to be there the whole week. I mean, first of all, you got to get used to the time change. It's not a small thing. I think it's an advantage for the Bills to be here early. And second of all, I mean, if the team is here, the media is here. And if the media is here, people are reading about it. And that, I'm not trying to give too much credit to what I do. But the thing is that if a team gets here, I mean, like the Jaguars, they get here on a Friday. And you're sure there's media covering it, but then that's basically just one day. It's a Friday. People aren't really tuned in or online as much on a Friday anyway. Traffic goes down on the weekend. I mean, there's really not much of a buzz for the team if they don't come early. So I think it's smart for the team. And also, I think a lot of these guys, I think they think it's cool to be here. I mean, for some of the Jags, I'm sure they're used to it. But for the Bills, I get the sense that it's something new. It's different. They treat them very well. The place where the Bills are staying is so nice. And so I think being here for a week, considering it's the bye week afterwards, is a good idea.
Eric Adelson, again, you know what? I think you do a great job, and I will pump up your work. You do a fantastic work there, my friend.
Thank you. I appreciate. No, this is an interesting talk, and it's the dawn of my day. So it's give me something good to think about for the rest of the day.
Good point. Thank you so much, Eric. I appreciate it. We'll hope to catch up with you soon, and have a safe flight back.
Thanks for calling overseas. Thanks to Adam for making it happen. It's good to be on.
Thank you. Again, Yahoo Sports is where you can catch that game, Bills and Jaguars, early in the morning on Sunday. When you wake up, get your tablet, your smartphone, your computer, laptop, whatever, and watch Bills and Jaguars. I think it is the future. I think this is where we're heading. A lot of people cutting cords and all that stuff, but they still want their sports. And I think that the market is going to say, you know what, this is where we can take it. And it's London. It's an early game. I think it's the right thing to do. And look, if you're going to do this, right, as an experiment, it only works with the London game, right? Because if you're going to say, all right, we want to see how Americans will go to their computer to watch a game, don't give them other games to compete with. So you can only do that with London. Get an early start, 8:30 in the morning, Eastern time or Central time, whatever. Get them up in the morning. Then the other games will occur. But if you say, hey, we're going to take one of the 1 o'clock Eastern games, one of the early games on Sundays, and throw that on the internet only, you don't get a real sense of how many people would want to tune into that. You get the local markets, of course. The two teams that they're in, of course. But then, all right, are there anybody in Seattle that tuned in while the Seahawks were not on? Was there anybody in St. Louis that punched in when the Rams aren't on? And with London, everybody's off until later in the day, and you get a real good sense. I'm really interested to see what the world numbers are going to look like for something like this. Because I think there is a curiosity factor from people around the world to see NFL football and to sort of see what this is about. And I know we were teasing because, hey, look, Monday night's game was terrible. But to a lot of people around the world, it's still a unique sport. All right, coming up next, Greg Hardy said something interesting. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
This guy's on.
Back to him. Back to the Quicken Loan Studios.
And back to Tony D.
All right, thanks to Eric Adelson out in London. He said something really interesting in that interview. I don't know if you caught it, Adam, where he said he has his doubts about L.A., but he could see London as more viable.
Yeah, I did hear that.
That's really interesting to think that the second largest market in our country is not a better option than London.
It just really seems like the owners, there's certain owners that want to move to L.A., I think, for financial reasons.
Right.
But the people of L.A. don't seem to really care.
You rarely in business get a chance to go to a complete and utter untapped market.
Right.
Like with something like that. And that, I think, is the appeal. It's like, do I go? I go to L.A. and then I got to, you know, the place. It hasn't been around for 20 years. People have got their loyalties now to whatever they want, right? So if I'm in L.A. and I grew up in L.A. and I didn't have an NFL team to root for, maybe I latched onto the Bears, or maybe I latched onto my dad's team because he was from Dallas or whatever. I don't get to come in fresh and be like, hey, everybody's on board. This, you all, because he's right. Like, even if you went to Portland, you would get a bunch of people to be like, yeah, I'm in Portland. But you'd also have the same people that are like, well, I like Portland, but I like Seattle too. And I like Oakland and I like San Francisco. Where in London, they're like, we're not really attached to anything. So if you build a London team, we're all in. We'll buy everything. It's completely untapped. I just think the logistics are impossible. And I just can't imagine that this will work. I just can't. It doesn't seem like it would. All right, Greg Hardy. I got to get to this because the game's this weekend with the Giants. Greg Hardy was asked about how to stop Eli Manning, the best way to play Eli Manning. And Hardy said, quote, hit him in the mouth. The best thing for any team is to make the quarterback feel pain. Hey, how dare Greg Hardy say that? Given Greg Hardy's past, how dare he say so? Wait, actually, that's actually what you want him to say, right?
Yeah, smart comment.
That's a smart comment. That's actually a pretty good comment. That's the kind of stuff that's pretty cool. Like, that's the stuff you'd want to say. Of course, hit him in the mouth. Everybody should. You know, exactly. That's the line you use when you want to talk about a quarterback and slowing him down and getting in and making you the quarterback know you're there. That's the fine thing to say. Oh, sure enough, there were people who overreacted. But on this one, I'm going to say it's normal, and it's something that Greg Hardy is allowed to say without any repercussions, okay? No, he didn't say anything about guns blazing. He didn't go in and talk about Eli Manning's wife or anybody else's girlfriend. No, he said what you want to say. And this is what he says. That you got to be respectful of the rules of the game. And honestly, you don't want to hurt anybody. But to make him feel you is to bring his eyes down. You don't want a quarterback like Eli Manning looking down the field ever, 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 ever. That's probably one of the most normal, regular things Greg Hardy has said since arrived at the Cowboys. Good for him. This is a good quote. Yahoo Sports Radio.